If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Electric truck company Lordstown Motors was one of the most high-profile startups to go public via SPAC last year. Now, two executives are stepping down amid a report about inaccurate disclosures.
Some of these statements were made kind of in that period that most, you know, a public IPO CEO would not have been able to kind of hype the company's prospects.
What it means for Lordstown and for investors in SPACs. And studies show COVID-19 vaccines offer protection against the Delta variant. Plus, why there's an upside to long lines at national parks. It's Monday, June 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. New findings out of the UK indicate that existing COVID-19 vaccines offer significant protection against the Delta variant, which was first detected in India. In a study of more than 14,000 Delta cases, Public Health England found that while protection against infection was somewhat lower, two doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine reduced the risk of hospitalization by 96%. For the AstraZeneca vaccine, it was just slightly lower. Jason Douglas has more from London.
The government scientists are pretty confident that vaccines are going to protect people, but what they want to do is get just a little bit more time to make sure they're getting doses into as many arms as they can and to make sure people get the two doses that gives you the maximum protection against this variant.
The Delta variant is believed to be more transmissible than other strains of the virus. It has become the dominant strain in the UK and has spread to more than 60 countries. The price of U.S. crude hit $71.48 a barrel today. It's the highest level in more than 2.5 years. Prices are up because U.S. consumption has soared as the country begins to emerge from the pandemic. OPEC cuts have also boosted prices. At the same time, we report that investors poured trillions of dollars into renewables like wind and solar energy in the first quarter of the year. Some analysts say these bets on green energy could sap spending on fossil fuels, making it tougher for energy companies to meet demand for oil and push prices even higher in the future. Bitcoin reached its highest level in more than 2 weeks, trading as high as 41,000 earlier today. That's a rise of nearly 11% from its level at 5 p.m. Eastern on Friday. The price of the cryptocurrency started to rise on Sunday after CEO Elon Musk tweeted that Tesla would reinstate accepting Bitcoin payments once more mining was powered by renewable energy sources. Prices were also boosted after MicroStrategy said in a securities filing that it had raised $488 million from its bond sale in order to buy additional Bitcoin. And corporate debt has skyrocketed. Companies that were borrowing at low interest rates before the pandemic have continued to borrow heavily. According to the Federal Reserve, non-financial companies had accrued more than $11 trillion in debt by the end of March. That's about half the size of the U.S. economy. We'll hear more about how the Fed is thinking about its easy money policies and its economic outlook later this week when the central bank concludes its policy meeting. Coming up, turmoil at electric truck company Lordstown Motors.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Last year, Lordstown Motors was one of several electric vehicle startups to go public through a SPAC, a reverse merger with a special purpose acquisition or blank check company, allowing it to forgo the traditional IPO process. But the company has faced questions about the information they provided during that process, including accusations that it misled investors about vehicle pre-orders and its readiness to start production later this year. Today, the company's chief executive, Steve Burns, and its finance chief, Julio Rodriguez, stepped down. Joining me now for more on what the latest news means for the company and what it can tell us about the risks of public offerings via SPAC is Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Foldy. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ben, what more can you tell us about why these executives resigned? What have you learned?
So the company didn't publish a reason, but last week the company restated its 2020 financial records reports to the SEC, and it amended a going concern warning, which is basically a notice from the company and its auditors that it has substantial doubt as to whether it can continue meeting all its financial obligations through the end of the year. It's a pretty big amendment, as you might imagine, to kind of go back and add, you know, the oops, you know, we may run out of money. So that may have played a role here. And then right before the announcement of the resignations came out, the company also published an internal kind of committee report over a short seller's report from March that alleged that the company had misled investors about the strength of pre-orders of its trucks and its ability to kind of start production in September. And that report found that the company and its executives did at some points kind of make some misstatements about the quality of those pre-orders.
So let's take each of these pieces in turn here. We know that Lordstown Motor went public last year by merging with a special purpose acquisition company. Would this disclosure process have been different if the company had gone through the traditional IPO route?
It's a little difficult to say, but one thing that does separate them is, you know, during a normal IPO, the company executives can't kind of go promoting their company. There's a quiet period. And some of these statements were made kind of in that period that most, you know, a public IPO CEO would not have been able to kind of hype the company's prospects. So it's possible that some of those kind of statements could have been avoided. The other thing that is a big difference between an IPO and a SPAC is that in a SPAC, the companies can make kind of forward projections of revenue. And in a lot of cases, these companies don't have revenue or you have very, very small revenues. Like they're not really selling their main product yet. So in this case, and several other like it, you know, the company could go to investors and say, well, we expect to make, you know, X billion amount of revenue in a couple of years. And you can't do that in a normal IPO.
Ben, does this tell us anything about the risks of potentially going public through a SPAC? Is it a cautionary tale in any regard?
I think both the going concern amendment and the disclosure statement about the pre-orders kind of illustrate some of the risks. One, that a process that allows CEOs and executives to go out and make statements about their kind of future of the company that had been treated kind of differently from the IPO process is now kind of leading to these issues after the fact of statements that may not have passed muster as a publicly traded company were made. So that's one element. And then the other, I think, is as part of amending their filing last week, Lordstown also admitted that they found, you know, material weaknesses in their financial reporting. And that kind of speaks to a broader problem that a lot of these companies seem to have, which is that, you know, they go public when they only have 50, 100 employees, you know, a smattering of folks. And, you know, a lot of those people don't seem to have experience, you know, with the accounting standards of a public company, with all the kind of extra layers of bureaucracy and rules that go with that, all the compliance costs. So Lordstown has disclosed that it's already facing SEC subpoenas. And it's not the only one of these companies to be going through that. So I think that indicates a bit just kind of, you know, I had an investment banker tell me once that a lot of these companies, it's kind of the corporate equivalent of taking a company that's basically as far along in life as like a first grader and having them get married and have kids. And that's how he described a lot of these spec companies. And I think that's a pretty apt description.
Wow. So what does all of this mean for Lordstown and its role or the role it hopes to have in the EV market?
I think at this point, it's a little difficult to say. I'm not sure Lordstown as a business looks that different than it looked, you know, a week ago. But, you know, Steve Burns was definitely the face of the company and was the central guy. It's if, you know, this isn't a one-to-one comparison, you know, what would have happened to Tesla if Elon Musk left the company, you know, 6 months before it launched the Model S? So it's definitely a blow from a leadership perspective and an image perspective. And, you know, the stock is way down today. The stock is, you know, they're not necessarily confident that they still have all the bad news out of the way. Maybe today is when that starts turning around, but too early to say.
So, Ben, what have you heard from Lordstown?
What the company put out this morning were two statements, one related to the report, which reiterated that, you know, they think they're on the path for starting production in September. And, you know, thanking Steve Burns and announcing kind of all the moving parts in the leadership level and, you know, kind of reiterating that they, you know, see themselves on track and they're going to hit their objectives. And, you know, this is kind of one of those shifts towards kind of commercialization. I was able to reach Mr. Burns, Steve Burns, via text, and he told me that he wouldn't be commenting.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Foldy. Ben, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks again.
finally, since overseas travel is still tricky, more Americans are taking road trips this summer. And popular national parks like the Arches, Canyonlands, and Yosemite are becoming increasingly overcrowded. Yellowstone saw a 50% increase in vehicle entries over Memorial Day weekend this year, compared with the same weekend in 2019. But our reporter Allison Poley says the boom is a mixed bag for local economies.
It's great that so many people are visiting, both for the parks and for the town. On the other hand, there's been a lot of towns that are looking for more workers, just as kind of there's a shortage of people to fill some of those service industry jobs. So at the same time, a lot of businesses are already stretched kind of thin. And then when you have an influx of people coming in, there might not be enough workers to handle the crowds. And that's what's being seen in nearby Moab. So there's a McDonald's in town. They have a sign that says they're hiring for $18 an hour, which is more than double Utah's minimum wage.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.